Welcome to Murder in the Air Mystery Theater. I'm your host, Lori Fagan. In this podcast series, I'll interview authors who will then read their mystery, suspense, or thriller short stories or a chapter from their published books. In addition, sprinkled throughout the coming weeks, the podcast will feature radio theater-style sections from the audiobooks for my three crime fiction novels. There will be prizes, too, so stick around to the end to find out how to enter. On this episode, I'll be reading my short mystery story called Three Strikes, about a British woman visiting California and checking out a quaint English inn. Elizabeth awoke to a blood-curdling scream from somewhere downstairs. Bolting upright, she was a bit disoriented as to her whereabouts until she remembered checking in the day before to what was touted as an accurate replica of an old English inn in this small Northern California town. British born and bred, she was anxious to determine its authenticity. Her eyes fell on the lovely cushioned window seat facing the ocean, which was warm and sunny yesterday while she read, but now seemed ominous with only a sliver of moonlight shining through. She swept her legs over the edge of a true reproduction four-poster canopy bed, laden with heavy brocade fabric, and stepped into her slippers. Rushing past genuine paintings of the English countryside, including a fox-hunting party, her feet padded on the expensive oriental rugs as she grabbed her robe and hastily threw it around her shoulders. She headed for the door, noting the blue digit on her travel clock, which read 4:48 a.m. She snatched an old-fashioned metal key from a table next to the entryway. A few curious hotel guests stuck their heads out the respective doors, but only Elizabeth dashed down the newly carpeted steps, ducking under a low overhang with the sign, "Mind Your Head." She sped through a classic snug room, a small private area where just last night she enjoyed tea with a few others in front of a roaring fireplace, now dark, cold, and bare. She raced up a couple of steps into the shadowy dining room and toward the kitchen, where she could hear excited voices.
Call 911.
I can't get cell service here. I think he's too late. Sliding her arms through the robe and tying its cloth belt tightly around her, she pushed open the heavy, dark, double swinging doors to the galley to find three employees standing around a young chap, sprawled face up on the old black brick floor, a dark pool of dried blood around his fair-haired head. It certainly appeared too late. "Pardon me, I'm a nurse," she said in her refined English accent. She grew up in the more stylish West London, but lived most of her adult life in the commoner southeast side of town, working just enough to earn her annual holiday travel money. Elizabeth bent down and laid two fingers on the man's neck, feeling for his carotid pulse. Finding none and detecting very cold skin beneath her hand, she tried to move his arm. It was stiff, and she concluded rigor mortis had already set in, putting the bloke's time of unfortunate death a few hours earlier. "Is he?" A young olive-skinned woman with long, thick black hair pulled back in a braid, held her hands over her mouth. "Dead, yes, I'm afraid he is." Elizabeth gently closed the lad's eyes, still with an expression of shock. She reached into his back pants pocket and found a wallet with a driver's license belonging to one Tyler O'Brien.
"Oh, pobrecita!"
shrieked a pudgy, small Hispanic woman with short salt-and-pepper hair, wearing a white apron and wringing her hands.
"He was such a good boy."
I mean...
The voice, belonging to a tall, anxious gent with dark, wide eyes, trailed off. Elizabeth glanced up, noting his face was as white as the woman's apron.
"Did someone ring the police?" Elizabeth asked calmly, searching the faces of the three.
"Yeah, I got through to 911 from the front desk phone," said the woman with the braid. But with the switchbacks, it may be at least 15 to 20 minutes before they're here. The unmoving trio continued to stare at the dead lad.
And you can't believe what exactly? Elizabeth watched the tall man as she touched the back of Tyler's head near where the blood had poured out. Her trained fingers felt a large, swollen contusion, obviously from a traumatic injury to his skull. And despite the dry blood in the area, she could tell the skin was split wide open from the wound.
What, me?
The man's hands shook at his side.
Yes, what is your name, please?
Elizabeth inquired.
Gerald, but it wasn't... I had nothing to do with it.
Gerald was looking more and more ashen as he ran his fingers nervously through his black hair.
Why don't you sit down, Gerald, and tell me what happened?
Gerald sank dejected into a nearby chair.
I found him, the woman with the braid interjected softly. And you are?
Elizabeth asked.
Sophie Bredolucci. Tyler was a good friend of mine.
She sniffed and rubbed her nose with her shirt sleeve.
And what did you find, dear?
I had just arrived to start my shift, and when I turned on the light, I saw him there. I screamed, and Gerald and Rosie came running from the back.
Gerald, when did you last see Tyler?
Elizabeth pulled herself to her feet and found a kitchen towel to wipe her bloodied hands.
Well, last night I was kitchen manager, and Tyler was supposed to be waiting tables, but he was at the front desk booking a tour for some old lady, and...
Sophie glared at Gerald, anger darkening her eyes.
You didn't write him up again, did you? She demanded.
Those are the rules, Gerald yelled, jumping to his feet. You know what the bosses say. If you're on payroll for one area, you are not to work in another. It messes everything up. He was hired for the dining room, but last week he took bags up to a room for a guest, and I had to report it. The week before he...
So this was his third strike. Sophie spit out the words.
Yeah, but when I wrote him up last night, he was very much alive.
Police and ambulance sirens wailed as they approached the hotel, gravel crunching on the driveway. Elizabeth looked quizzically at Sophie, who had tears streaming down her face.
Three strikes and...
Elizabeth's eyebrows rose with the unfinished question.
You're out, as in fired.
Sophie couldn't keep her temper under control.
He didn't deserve to be sacked, and he didn't deserve this.
Who would have been the one to close up last night?
Elizabeth asked, stooping down to the uneven Norfolk brick floor, a respectable replication of a circa 1700s London scullery. The glint from a long, wet streak on the floor caught her eye. She touched it with one finger and brought it to her nose to sniff.
The bartender would have been done about 1:30, so Tyler was probably the last one,
Sophie responded. Two paramedics rushed in with a gurney, followed by a patrol officer.
I'm afraid, gentlemen, there's not much you can do for our young victim,
Elizabeth told the men, handing the wallet to the lawman.
But you might want to speak to Gerald here about olive oil.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Gerald stammered.
You were the one I saw last evening after I had tea, filling up the bottles of olive oil and vinegar for salads following the dinner hour, isn't that right?
Well, yes. I mean, usually, of course I do, but what does...
And you probably knew Tyler would be the last one in the kitchen?
Yes, Sophie said. I mean, I guess he...
And maybe you just accidentally spilled a wee bit of salad oil on the floor from here to here,
she pointed, indicating a 3-foot-long, 2-inch-wide line of liquid glistening in the dim light.
So when an upset Tyler ran through the kitchen after being written up, he would slip and fall?
But I just wanted to scare him. I didn't mean to...
Gerald stammered, backing up toward the door.
Didn't mean to kill him?
The officer whipped open a pair of handcuffs with a loud metal ratchet sound and slapped the restraints on Gerald's wrists.
You're under the arrest for the death of Tyler O'Brien.
The officer ushered a stunned Gerald out the front door.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
Elizabeth heard the officer's voice fade as she watched the paramedics lift Tyler onto the gurney and maneuver their lone passenger outside the white stonewashed inn, covered with vines, and down the meandering red brick walkway to the parking lot. As she headed back to her room, she pondered the management decree, which encouraged a demented, "It isn't my job," worker excuse. Despite its unique and charming decor, she decided this beastly hotel would receive only one strike and was already out. That was my short story called Three Strikes by Laurie Fagan. Join us again next time when on episode number 10, you'll hear the next segments of L.N. Payne, P.I., a campy film noir story from my crime fiction novel's audiobook called Dead Air. And on episode number 11, author Charlotte Whitney will be here to talk about and read from her historical mystery novel. If you are listening on the podcast platform of your choice, please subscribe and leave a review or provide us with some feedback. If you're on YouTube at Read Laurie Fagan, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, and click on the bell to be notified when a new episode has been released. And for more freebies, check out our Patreon page at Murder in the Air Mystery Theater. Remember I mentioned prizes? At the end of each of these Murder in the Air podcasts, we'll have a drawing for a prize from those who follow Read Laurie Fagan on Facebook or Instagram, and in the comment, write murder to be entered in a drawing. We'll have drawings for free ebooks, chances to win your name in a novel, and other fun items. So go to Facebook or Instagram, follow Read Laurie Fagan, and write murder in the comment. For more information, you can visit readlauriefagan.com. Thanks so much for listening, and come back again for more Murder in the Air.